by the planets and the fixed stars and so on, create a kind of cosmic harmony. So it's a lesson in celestial mechanics, or celestial geometry would probably be a better way to talk about it. It says, if you look at that, take that as a kind of lesson for the way in which, in the universe as a whole, the relationship between the parts and the whole presents us with a kind of harmony. All right? And in fact, that's a lesson that he learned from Plato. Plato sort of advises contemplating the spheres as a way of making the divine part of oneself. And Dante is basically coming in that whole tradition from Plato, contemplating the harmony of the spheres also prepares Dante to contemplate the harmony of a kind of celestial universe that he sets up, not only with planets and stars and their relationship to each other, but in terms of the souls themselves that he sees here. Okay? Because he deliberately presents it as a kind of universe based on the same kind of motions and harmonies that he sees in the universe itself. And in a sense, what he's saying is that the physical cosmology, the physical universe, and the moral universe of the sphere turn out to be interconnected. They turn out to be parts of the same whole.
Let's see just in some ways how that complementarity, that harmony work in these two circles of 12 great thinkers and theologians. First of all, in each one, we really have a speaker who sort of represents the group and introduces Dante to the rest of the group. One of those speakers is Thomas Aquinas, the great Dominican theologian, that's a member of the Dominican order, who dies in 1274. Now, Dante gets a break here. The other main speaker is Bonaventure, the Franciscan theologian, member of the Franciscan order, who dies in 1274. Can't beat that. He lucked out they died the same year, but he's able to have them as the speakers. Now, most of the figures in these groups of 12 are, in fact, people who, at least in the Middle Ages, would be the likely suspects to be here. People like the Venerable Bede, a great theologian and historian of early medieval Christianity. We have Gratian, the great canon lawyer of the 12th century. It's that crowd, by and large. There's also, in each of the two circles, one Old Testament figure. In one, the prophet Nathan, and in the other, we have the wisest of all the kings, King Solomon. And, interestingly enough, in each of these two circles of theologians, we have one sort of very unlikely character. Specifically, in each of these two circles, we have somebody, some of whose writings were condemned by a pope in Dante's own century. That is to say, we have a philosopher theologian named Siger of Brabant, and we have a sort of late 12th, early 13th century monastic prophet named Joachim of Fiore. And so even there, in their complementarity, once again, Dante is also challenging his readers, urging his readers, simply don't take a lot of things for granted. Don't assume the answers you got in hell were the right answers. Don't assume, he teaches this to us in purgatory, don't assume that if somebody dies excommunicated, they're automatically excluded from heaven. Don't assume if somebody had a book condemned by the Pope that that person's a heretic and cast down into hell. So that in addition to the harmony and complementarity, as always, Dante is pushing his reader, challenging his reader.
Yeah, notice that in those two cases, Siger of Brabant was somebody who took philosophical ideas and perhaps pushed them too far, or at least that was the reading that was given in his own time. And Joachim of Fiore was somebody who took certain theological ideas and pushed them too far, both of whom, I think, had followers that even went farther than they did and took things almost to dangerous lengths. So that, as Bill pointed out, it kind of gives the reader a start to see that they're in there with the biggies. And again, remember, we have to remind ourselves that here in the circle of the sun, in the same way that Venus stands for love and Mars for war, the sun, a traditional pagan pagan and Christian symbol of wisdom. So what we're talking about is people who get here because their wisdom now is acknowledged. I mean, here they are being presented as wise men. You can't be in the circle of the sun. It's not enough to be saved. You have to belong to that subdivision of people who were wise men. And so Dante is interested really in using all of these figures to kind of form a definition of what it means to be a wise man. After all, this is an important lesson for the pilgrim, or indeed for any of us, to learn. And one